All right. Go ahead and call back to order. For those that may just be joining us, there is a portion of the hearing where the commission is addressing staff and project experts with questions for clarification. Before we broke for lunch, Commissioner Hart had the floor, and so I will go to Commissioner Hart for his questions.
Okay, so when I left off, I asked from staff and from council. Am I on?
It might not be on.
It should be.
It's on.
Pull it closer.
Is it on?
Yeah.
It sounds like it's on, you just need to bring it closer, yeah.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I asked before we left for comment from staff and from council about what are the parameters, sideboards, that the commission can and cannot do under the CEQA process of going through the environmental document. We have all these different issues under the EIR, under CEQA, I should say, of different levels of analysis. At this point, there have been four major ones that have come out in comment back from the public. And some of that's been addressed and analyzed, but we're not in the final EIR. So we're not going to be making a decision, but in looking at this between now and next month, when we do have the final EIR and the responsibility of making that decision, we as a commission have to base our decision on the rules and regulations of CEQA, county code, public resources code, fish and game code, water code, subdivision map act, all of that stuff. It all has to do with zoning and planning. It's my understanding that under those rules and regulations, that's what we have to operate within. We can't go and put more stuff into those rules and regulations. We have no legal right to do that. Am I correct in saying that?
This is Bill Carroll, County Council. To the extent that we want to add conditions to the project and change mitigation measures, we can do so so long as they are more stringent than the rules and regulations that are out there. We don't have any authority to relax anybody's rules and regulations, but we can impose more stringent ones. And that brings up, I hope I'm answering your question so far.
No, you are.
Okay. And then I've got a more general comment. We really have two major documents here. The draft EIR, but then also the resolution with the conditions of approval. And the conditions of approval aren't constrained by CEQA. The conditions of approval for the resolution are not a CEQA document. They're like the normal conditions of approval we have for every use permit that comes before the Planning Commission. And if there's particular conditions you want to add to the project, adding to the conditions of approval is certainly a very appropriate vehicle. You can, with the EIR, also look to adjust mitigation measures if you think that would address the environmental issues better. But I guess in conclusion, I want to say we can impose more stringent requirements than what state agencies require. We can do that with the conditions of approval with our resolution, or we can do we look to do that with the mitigation measures in the EIR.
So let's just take CAL FIRE 4290 regulations, where the state has a standard that we have to meet no matter what project comes along. And you're telling us that we can put more to it, what we would deem as more fire safety.
Yes.
Conditions to that.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how I would go about judging that unless I'm talking to a bunch of fire experts. under water quality. Those are standards that are governed or overseen by Regional Water Quality Control out of the Santa Rosa office and Siskiyou County Public Health. You have those water quality standards. How in a case like that could we then say under conditions, well, you're going to go beyond what those standards are? Is that possible, or is that?
You mean?
I.e. sewage treatment, whatever.
Well, I think at that point it also becomes whether you can realistically enforce those more stringent conditions and who would do that. I suppose theoretically, although that sounds awfully specialized, you start getting into water quality standards.
Well, the reason I'm asking this question, because there are numerous studies that we've got. There have been some competing studies that come in, and they raise some questions. And I, as a layperson, I have to make a call here, who's got the best science? And I'm looking at it legally, where are our hands tied to accept the science that comes in that's been performed under CEQA, where you have a third-party consultant come in to analyze those segments under the environmental review, whereas competing science comes in under the stuff that's done for the project, for the county. I look at that as an objective review. Whereas some of the other competing science that comes in, I would have to classify that at this point as subjective review. I have to sort that out, who's got the best science. And so, you know, I've talked to a lot of experts over this specific project and water with a couple of departments of UC Davis, the county GSP. I just want to know where I can go. Or what I can't do.
No, of course. Especially when you have two competing ideas, what the Planning Commission probably really wants to do is see if there's substantial evidence, what's called really substantial evidence behind these competing ideas. And both ideas could have substantial evidence. And by substantial evidence, I mean facts, not opinions, measurements, not so much guesses and things like that. But facts, measurements, studies constitute substantial evidence. And if both arguments have it, then it's very fair to simply choose between the two. On the other hand, maybe one side has good substantial evidence and the other is based solely on opinion. Like, you know, I don't know what the water will all dry up if the pond is dug, and I don't mean to actually make that an actual point, but if somebody says the water will all dry up because the pond is dug, but there's really no concrete thought behind that statement, and the other side has done analysis and flows and things like that, then that other side does have substantial evidence. It's kind of an easy example, but I'm trying to illustrate that if you have arguments that have substantial evidence behind them, facts, measurements, studies, then those are safe to go with. If there's competing studies, well, then that's why you're here, you get to choose between the two. If there's not substantial evidence behind position, then I would recommend the Planning Commission not go with that.
In all the years of experience I've had dealing with permitting issues, whether it be Cal Fish and Game ITP 1600 program that took place 20 years ago, my own permits, when something goes out there for public review, people are taking a look at it to see where there may be flaws in the document that's put there. So whatever's put in front of the decision makers, they have to then decide which is the best science. And this is what I have been counseled through all the different legal counsels that I've had employed in chasing my own permits, that when and if a document gets challenged legally in court, the judge is probably going to defer to the agency's science over outside science. Again, because he has to decide who has the best science, and he's not an expert. So he's going to defer to the agency's science, because that's the best available science. And that's kind of, I'm viewing that as that's the position that we are in. Are our hands tied?
Well, I'd say essentially, yes. I don't think it's couched in the terms of best available science. It's whatever science and conclusions are backed up by solid evidence can be used by the planning commission in making its decisions. There are going to be times, you know, I mean, a really common example would be climate change. There's probably all sorts of predictions and opinions about what's going to happen in 50 years from now.
Yeah.
Who's to say what the best science is, but what you do want to go with in our hearings is that it's something backed up with facts and analysis. That's not just opinion and guesses. And so I'm not sure, legally nobody, I'm not aware of any courts that say, well, we go with the best science, but courts want to know the planning commission or the board of supervisors went with a position that was supported by facts and studies, things like that, instead of, as I say, opinions or just conclusions without anything behind it. I'm probably not getting you as clear an answer as you want, but I don't think there's a best choice. There's just, does the planning commission or board of supervisors choose a choice that is backed up evidence?
I'm trying to make it as black and white as I can possibly make it for us, and make it based on law and based on science, our decision. I'm not here to make a political decision. That goes to the next level up. So I'm just trying to make it as simple as I can for my analysis on this process and going through the data and the stuff that's been presented to me today. We're going to have more stuff between now and next in September. And I'll go through and do all my research and study it. So that answering you guys' question, and you're just as confused now as when I brought it up?
No.
Okay.
But I won't say that I'm clear cool water. I'd say it's a little less muddy.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Speaking for myself, when I read these documents, which I do, I have to trust in staff, and especially like you're talking about water. Water's a big deal in the state, has been for decades. Who's right? That's the problem I have. So you get a study from some private engineer, and you get a study from the state, and they conflict. So where do you go then? That's where I have an issue.
That's so, why I'm asking you questions.
But here, so how long do we delay putting off or making a decision when there's no definite way of grading or deciding how much water or whatever?
That's why I'm asking what's the process.
Yeah, well
here's what we can and can't do. Process-wise, where are our hands constrained?
Well, here's how I feel about it. If I do my homework and I have questions and I call staff and they verify that this is the best knowledge available, that's what I have to base my decision on. That's all. Because I'm no expert. But, you know, I like to read and I got good common sense, but there's conflicts all the time. You mentioned climate change. You know? Yeah. That's an opinion. 50 years ago, I mean, 50 years from now, I don't give a damn. I'm not going to be here. so, you know?
Well, and let me just generally comment too. I think it's hard at this stage for everybody because we have all the letters objecting
yes.
to the project. We don't have the final EIR with all that's going to have all the responses to all the objections. And I think that will set up the issues a lot better than they are at the moment because we kind of just seem one-sided things, mainly the people objecting. Kidder Creek side has not really put together the final document for us yet. And that nice little table I'm sure they will do of comments and what was said and what their response is. And I think that will also help clarify for everybody, including staff, what we need to look at.
Well, so
hopscotching around.
So what council just stated, in my mind, I'm wondering, do we want to go, because I have a lengthy list of questions for the gentlemen who are here dealing with water transportation, water quality, water quantity, water use, noise, ingress, egress, etc. Are you gentlemen going to be back here at the next, I'm assuming in September as well? Because there's a chance, the question is, do we want to throw this out now, have them answer it when it could be answered in the report we get next month, but we may have questions that weren't asked in letters.
So instead of pose the question to them, and if they've got a quick answer, fine. But if they don't, let them put that into stuff that comes back.
Fire away then.
All right, so first I'm going to go over my first question here. On the project application here, we have applicant Critter Orchard Camp, Inc., property owner, Mount Herman Associates. One owner or two of the property? One of you guys, up to the microphone, please.
Hey, Tim Lloyd. My understanding is that Kidder Creek owns the property. There's two different organizations, 501c3s, Mount Herman Organization and Kidder Creek. And Kidder Creek owns all the property. Mount Herman runs programs at Kidder Creek.
Okay, so then Kidder Creek, you guys, owns the property. You own the water right off of Barker Ditch.
Yes, Kidder Creek does.
Yes. That's part of the court decree.
Yes, that's correct.
In your decreed right.
In the decreed right, it says Jones, two okay. souls.
Is the amount that you're decreed at point of diversion or at point of delivery?
Point of diversion.
Is that the same thing for the Jenners?
Yes.
So it's none of this, it's just my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, and please correct me, Mr. Fowle, because you're on the Water Master District, that there are some of those water rights in Scott Valley where the water right is at the point of delivery, not at the point of diversion.
Only as it applies to delineation as to a live winter livestock right or a winter storage right. All ag irrigation water rights are determined at the POD.
So back to the curtailment. There's language in the curtailment that deals with leaky ditches. Whereas if you pipe or line your ditch, that's then not considered a waste of water.
According to the state, yes.
You have all the irrigation ditches in Scott Valley, leak. They're very, very inefficient.
There's one efficient one out, okay. Chris, but that's it.
So, the use of that water, like well water, goes right back in the ground.
That is a factual statement.
Okay. So the actual water used by plant is very minimal compared to what your full ride is because of the inefficiency of the ditch.
Correct? Correct.
Mr. Chair, it seems that our connection to our Zoom dropped if you'd like to pause the meeting.
So is it correct the property owner? Hold on, Dusty. Give 1 minute.